All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lensing.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Providing up-to-the-minute information.
Of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only...
On interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's your host of Lickin on Lending,
3, 2,
David Lickin.
Merry Christmas to multiple thousands of our listeners. I hope this day is a blessing to you, that you join friends and family. And today, I am excited about this podcast. Yes, we're doing a podcast, and we're doing one that's unusual. We're focusing on the reason for the season, what this Christmas holiday is about. And I can't think of anyone that was more suited for this podcast than to invite Casey Crawford, CEO of Movement Mortgage, to join me on this special podcast on this special day. Merry Christmas, Casey. Good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, Merry Christmas to yourself, Dave. Yeah, glad to be here, man. This is it's a pleasure. It's always great to catch up with you, and it's especially good to catch up with you during this Christmas holiday.
Well, and we should tell our audience that, you know, as we start this interview, that one of the most important things that they know is that you and I develop and are really bonded around what we share as a deep and profound faith in the reason for the season, Jesus. And this special day is, of course, celebrating the birth of Jesus. It's become so much more to so many people, and it's the commercialization of it and all that. But it comes back to that. It's a time where people start really focusing in on, who is this Jesus? What is he about? And we'll talk some about that, but I'm really interested in the principles of our Christian faith and how it has guided both of us in our businesses and in our personal lives. And I think one of the things that I'm blessed by is that I believe the Lord directed our two lives to gather, and it was at the very beginning of you starting your company, New American Mortgage, back in the old days, and then it changed to Movement Mortgage. And and I was there. We've known each other for over 10 years. And those humble beginnings, you look at what's happened, Casey, to your business and our lives. But I'm so blessed that our friendship has not only reconnected 10 years ago, but it's thrived and grown since those days.
And what I'm sure most people don't know is that 10 years ago, I Googled how to start a mortgage bank, and this silver fox came strolling onto the screen. I don't know if you remember that old advertisement you ran, Dave.
Oh,
you walked on the screen, and I looked at this guy, the guru of mortgage banking, and said, "Hey, I can help you do this." And I started a mortgage bank.
So
I picked up the phone, and you were gracious to answer and answer some great questions at that time. And I join you, man, in that. It's been just a privilege to walk with you for the last decade, and the friendship of growing a business and sharing a faith has been a real treasure for me.
Well, I appreciate it. We had that old flash video where I walked on the screen, and it was really a team. Andy Schell and Chuck Klein, my two partners at the time, we all played a role in building, helping you, giving you some early on-site wisdom. But look at what the success has brought to you. And what I want to focus in on today is I really want to talk about how has your faith impacted, number one, your personal life, and then we're going to go to your business life. So how has your personal faith in the Lord Jesus really impacted your personal life?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. People ask that sometimes. I have a tough time defining that, I think, because it's so interwoven into everything that there isn't an area of my life that I would say has not been impacted. So I'm sure we don't have time in the podcast to get into every which way that my hope and faith in Christ has impacted my life. But I think particularly in business, and in the mortgage space in particular, it's kind of informed just a lot of our company culture and our company ethos of who we are and who we want to be. And our mission statement is that we exist to love and value people. And that really comes from Matthew 22, where Jesus is asked by a group of attorneys what the most important commandment in the whole Bible is. And I kind of joke this, you know, an ex-football player, I appreciate the Cliff Notes of the Bible, where he kind of summed it up and said, hey, the most important verse or most important commandment in all scripture is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. You do these two things, you do well. And so we've really kind of taken that mandate and tried to apply it to our company. How do we honor God by loving people well? And that's our customers, that's our teammates, and that's the communities that we're a part of. And that really just informed pretty much every decision we make. And we kind of said, you know, God's asked me, he said, you know, how do you think about culture and how do you think about these things? It seems so fun and stuff. I said, we just have tried to build the company that we want to be a part of. And if you've kind of based your life on the fact and thought that people are created with purpose, with intentionality by a God who loves them and that we're called to love them as we love ourselves, that it gets really easy to be a part of something that's a lot of fun because you're going to love the people that you're working with. Like I know you did with Andy Schell and those guys. And you want to love your customers. You want to care for them. And you want to love the communities that you're a part of. And some people get funny with that word love. You know, I say, man, love. Yeah, it's not a word you hear in financial services a lot, right? It's not a word you hear outside of maybe a movie on Friday night. And I had a Catholic priest who defined it for me this way, and it was really useful. He said, love is acting in the long-term best interest of another. So there's a lot of definitions for love, and there's, you know, obviously a lot of other languages use a lot of different words to articulate what we mean when we say love in the English language. But I think one useful definition for us, an operating definition for us in our company, is acting in the long-term best interest of another.
I remember the interview with Maria Bartiromo on Fox, and I had the privilege. I was on Fox a lot, and still am occasionally. But the producer called me and says, hey, look, we have you on a whole lot. Is there anyone that you could recommend getting on Fox? So I said, you got to call Casey Crawford. So they got you on, and you talked about that. And there's that one interview that our listeners have not seen that Maria Bartiromo did of you on there. It's really good. And she really was drawn into your story. I mean, I think you went on thinking it's going to be about the mortgage industry. But people are drawn into that story, your story, because there's something special about it. And a lot of companies say, well, we got a good culture, and they work on culture. How has your Christian faith fashioned that culture, and how do you carry it? Obviously, I mean, you're faith-based, and a good number of your management are, but not everybody is. How do you do that in a culture where everyone's so concerned about not offending people? I mean, talk about that.
Yeah, well, I'm concerned about that too. You know, I don't like to offend people. I mean, who likes to offend people, right? I think you know, the way we thought about Dave is again, man, we're pretty simplistic about it, right? And if we get back to that scripture, Matthew 22, where Jesus is pretty simplistic about his you know, edicts to us, and there, I've not met anyone yet who sat in my office that says, you know what, I want to be in an environment that does not love and value me. And so when we've talked about saying, hey, man, we believe that God has called us to love our neighbor as ourselves. And yeah, the story, because the question that comes right after that is, oh, well, who's your neighbor, right? Who's your neighbor? Who's this? And the story he tells right after that is actually about two enemies, two people groups who are enemies, and two people who should be kind of adverse to one another, and the one person coming and helping the person who is in need, who actually, you know, it would be the equivalent of, like, you know, North and South Korea or something, right? Like a North Korean helping a South Korean in their time of need. So that's your neighbor. That's your neighbor. And so when we say, hey, love people as you want to love yourself, love your neighbor, that means love my coworkers. So we say, hey, we want to create an environment where you are loved, where you are valued, where we care about who you are as a mother, as a father, as a friend, as a husband. We try to help you live into your best self, and we want to give you every opportunity, you know, to grow and to be surrounded by a community that really cares about you, not just your work product, but really cares about you as a human being, as a person. And, you know, that's just not a hard sell. I got to tell you, it's not a hard sell.
No, people embrace that. But then, so the big question is, that's a great statement. How do you do it? It's oftentimes, we understand why you do it. We understand that is an important purpose.
But tactically,
how have you effectively done that? And you have.
That's a great question. And I think, hey, listen, if you're talking about a group of 10 people, it's very easy, right? You can very organically think about how to care for
someone. You've got over 4,000 employees now. Yeah. I mean, over 4,000?
Yeah. And so, yeah, we have about 4,400 employees and about, you know, 600 offices around the U.S. And so it's very spread out and it's very tough. And I was actually just talking with a young business owner about this concept. He goes, man, you have all these great programs now. You have this, and I'll use LoveWorks as an example. Because you have this great LoveWorks tour that's in a company care fund. And LoveWorks is a fund that's set up by our company. And any employee in a time of need can apply for a grant from the fund. The fund is supplied by employees give a portion of their paycheck, sometimes a dollar, sometimes really significant amounts, to our LoveWorks fund, and then our company foundation matches all the employee contributions. We have a group of five staff who hear all the requests, then pray for, meet with, get into counseling all the families or individuals that are in need within the company that apply for a LoveWorks grant. So it's, I mean, it's this fabulous program, and we serve about 60 families a month. We'll give about close to $1 million a year out through our LoveWorks program. And I mean, gosh, you just hear heartbreaking stories, but stories that we're so thankful to be able to be a part of. We've helped spouses bury their loved ones. We've helped women escape domestic violence. We've helped folks that were homeless. I mean, these are working people, right? These are members of our work community that are working full time, and just fall on hard times. And they know that they are part of a community that says we care, we love you, and we will stand in the gap when you have a shortfall. And so that's this really formal program that we have now, right? With administration and forms and a committee. And I mean, they do it so well. But that was just that program is just a formal expression of what we organically did when there was just 10 of us. Because just about any community, if you know what's going on, if there's 10 people and you heard about one of your people in your 10 person work group was in a domestic violence situation, and they had to escape their home, and they were living in an apartment, and their husband had locked them out of the funds. Almost every one of us would make sure that you had enough money for a hotel.
So that's a great question. A lot of people – that's a great question, because what you're talking about is, and people say, well, if he has 4,400 people and they're all contributing some amount, I can understand how you can get that kind of money. But we're just a small company, and we can't do that. We don't know how to do it. Talk to that small business owner that's growing. Like, you just had one in your office we talked about before we started recording this interview. And so talk to those that are small that think that – that argue that they can't do that. Show ways in which you can.
I actually think it's easier. It's easier to do when you're small because that's where we did it. Everything we do now, we were doing when we were small and we've kind of scaled. Workouts is another great. So LoveWorks, again, it just happened organically, right? It just meant that, hey, we wouldn't let someone that's in our work community fall on hard times and wouldn't try to help them in those hard times. You know, it doesn't mean paying off a house for them or doing anything crazy. It just means like most people just want, I mean, they just need a hand up. They don't need a hand out, right? They just need a hand up out of the ditch while they fall on a hard time. And we would do that very organically and intentionally. And then we had to put a programmer out to scale it with size. Working out's another great example. You know, we say, hey, we got one body. God's giving you one body. And we think, man, that's precious. And it, man, you use it. It's a vessel. And I want you to take care of it. And so we used to have a company in us. We would challenge each other all the time on like have eating contests and have, you know, workout contests and diet challenges and things. And we just did that very organically, right? Like it was just you and I go, Dave, man, hey, that's the fourth day in a row you brought a box of Krispy Kremes in. All right, man, like enough, all right? and we'd say, hey, Dave, because I care too much about you, man, to watch you do this. I'm watching you kill yourself, and you're not taking care of this one precious body that you have. And so, Dave, I want to challenge you to do better, man. I want to challenge you to do better. And so now we have, you know, we have an entire wellness program, you know, in the company. We have gyms and all of our major facilities. We had a couch to 5K challenge. We had 2,000 of our 4,400 employees sign up for the couch to 5K challenge, which was just to say to get moving. And we have people who are incredible runners who went out and like set, you know, world record 5K times. And we had a number of team members who had never walked a mile, And they got up and walked for the first time 5K. And man, we celebrated like crazy inside that community. Everybody, you know, moving forward in their fitness journey, caring for their bodies, right? But that was, again, that was just organically. If you just have 10 people, if you have 5 people, if you're a company of 3, man, care enough about the people you're working with to speak into their life with their physical health, their emotional health, their, you know, if they fall in a hard time, love them, care for them, man. This isn't extremely complex things.
I love the video that you recently posted in LinkedIn, which shows your wife, Michelle, who is a CrossFit champion, and she has her foot on your back, and you're doing a push-up, and it's a great story. And I just love the marriage that you have. I mean, a lot of people struggle with success, Casey. They enjoy it, but they get off course in their personal life. You and your precious wife, Michelle, have beautiful daughters, and you're – talk about how have you been able to maintain a work-life balance? That's a struggle for many that become very successful.
It is. I do. Michelle and I have been married 17 years. I married a girl that was my best friend in college. That helps a lot, right?
It does, yeah.
And we have two beautiful girls. We got an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old. 11's about to turn 12. So Santa is still very real in our house. We're still, dressing up in Mrs. Claus outfits and everything. So we're
so cool.
It's a great season in life. And, I think really early on, we have to hustle. You have to work really hard to get a business up and running. But Michelle and I have always been a partnership, in that. And she always knows, why I was doing what I was doing. We've really tried to share jointly in the journey, sharing the journey, right? Don't go on it alone. Go on it together. And again, that's been a really benefit, I think, of running this company. But Michelle, as you saw a picture of her with her foot on my back, that's our company gym that she was in. And she comes in and leads workout classes. Yeah, she comes in 3 days a week and leads workout classes inside the company. So she is a world-class CrossFitter on her own. She was
literally a world-class.
The world, a few years back. Yeah. She was in the Masters last year. I mean, she's literally world-class on her own, runs a very successful CrossFit gym here in town, and makes time to come and lead workout classes here at the office. So we're working out together. We're working out with our friends. And we do a lot of outreach together also. So, we did that Couch to 5K challenge. She actually led that initiative across the organization. And it just keeps our lives integrated. It keeps us in this adventure together as partners, not kind of running separate lives off in our own directions, man. So, when we're, sitting in bed at night, we might be celebrating, the story of one gal, Virginia Flynn, who quit smoking. She completely changed her diet, lost a ton of weight, and ran her first 5K. And she and Michelle are emailing back and forth. Michelle's celebrating that with her. I'm celebrating that. I mean, it keeps our lives just interwoven. And I think that's important.
So
we're trying to involve our kids in the same way. My daughters ran the 5K also, right? So they're out there with the company, with the sweatshirts, running their first 5Ks. I mean, it's a family event, man, a family affair.
I love that. Well, your influence and your giving back into the community has gone global. I want to take a few minutes to talk about what you're doing in Africa. I'm looking at your LinkedIn page. I encourage people to go check out your LinkedIn page and Facebook pages, but your LinkedIn page shows you with a big smile on your face and all these black kids kind of hang off. And I remember you told me, I caught you when you were over there one time, you texted me, says, I feel like a jungle gym, your height and your cigarette, because these kids are crawling all over you and the joy on their face. Talk about what that has done for your life, your company, but you're bringing this into your company, encouraging people to go over there. Talk about all this. Great story.
Yeah. So another really organic initiative has been our vision trips around the world. And we've said, hey, man, in the United States, we have a very unique experience. We are the wealthiest nation in the world. The experience of growing up and living in the United States is not typical in the world. And so we say, hey, because we love you, because we care for you, we want to give you a broader perspective of what the human condition looks like around the world. And we want to encourage you to go take a vision trip to expand your vision of what the experience of our fellow man looks like in places that aren't the United States. And this is kind of that concept of opening your eyes to how do you love your neighbors yourself. Well, the first thing that happens with the Good Samaritan story is that he's exposed to his neighbor's condition, right? So we want our folks to understand the experience of folks around the world. So we started doing these very organic vision trips, and some friends of mine challenged me, hey, let's go to Africa. And I'd never gone to Africa, and I didn't particularly actually want to go to Africa for 10 days in the middle of the summertime, the busiest season of the mortgage time, without my kids, because I wasn't ready to take my kids yet to this place that I hadn't checked out. But, I kind of relented and ended up going to Africa. And all over Africa, they want us to speak about entrepreneurship. And we're going around Uganda and some different places. And they said, man, come talk about entrepreneurship. Come talk about entrepreneurship. And hundreds of people would show up. And I'd ask them what they did. And all the folks were unemployed. And they were small business owners. They were making garments, or they were farming, an acre of land and things. And I finally came to the realization, man, these folks aren't entrepreneurs necessarily. They're just unemployed. And there's a significant difference, I think, of people who are called to be entrepreneurs and equipped to be entrepreneurs and people who have to be entrepreneurs because they're unemployed.
Right.
And it really became obvious to us, man, the same concept of a marketplace company, a company that operates in the economy of a community that thinks about loving and caring for the people that are part of that company and for the consumers, man, it's needed in Uganda just as much as it's needed in Charlotte, North Carolina, or, Dallas, Texas. So we looked around and went, man, Uganda actually has some of the most fertile soil in the world. They say if you farmed Uganda commercially, you could actually feed all of Africa. It's that
fertile. Wow.
Yeah, because of civil war and generational, there's all been all kinds of killing, all kinds of chaos, and because of these wars that have gone on, they have lost a lot of knowledge of farming. And so we thought, man, what a beautiful opportunity. We're going to buy a couple thousand acres over here and create a commercial farm, use the food to send up to the Sudanese refugee camps right about 2 hours north on the border, employ people, give them jobs, and then take the profits and pour it back into some schools and churches that we're going to build throughout the countryside out there. So it's a longer story, but man, came to fruition in less than 2 months, bought this land.
Wow.
We harvested our first crops last year. Had some great friends go over there, visit the farm with us 6 months ago. They called us 2 weeks ago and said, hey, we're so encouraged by what we're seeing with the farm. We'd like you to take over our chicken farms that we've been working for the last 10 years on and create a whole vertical there. They had the same vision. They wanted to see the kingdom advance, see people loved in God's name. They gave us some chicken farms over there. So now some of our feed goes to the chicken farms. We're selling about 5,000 chickens a week over in Uganda. We have a few thousand acres of land, that we're farming. And, you know, we're giving people jobs, giving them dignity, and teaching them to be entrepreneurs. And then we're training farmers, local farmers, on how to farm their land and leverage this incredible resource that God's given them to be a blessing both to the people of Uganda and then the people of that whole region. And just providentially, as God would have it, the biggest food crisis in the world is just 2 hours to our north in those Sudanese refugee camps. There's almost a million people now in those refugee camps. So we just feel incredibly privileged to be there and to be able to be, you know, play a really, really small role, but helping alleviate some of that suffering.
Well, this has also brought you to a place where you are now becoming known and having the opportunity to have an influence in governments over there. I was talking to you the other day about my daughter going to Zambia on a missions trip, part of Baylor University, to help kids with their resumes that are homeless and really help them get into business, get into entrepreneurship. And I was talking about that, and you said, oh, the president or the candidate, the guy that's running for president of Zambia, just left my office a few minutes ago. I think it's so amazing that when you start doing the basic things at the grassroots, that people understand the influence, that when you start building farms, Casey, that you buy 2,000 acres, but it gets noticed, and you have the impact all the way up to the highest levels of government. Do you feel comfortable talking about that a bit?
Yeah, no, sure. I do. I mean, I think this is, you know, people talk about, hey, is your culture relevant in the United States? And man, will that culture work in Texas? Or man, I don't know, that's fine in North Carolina, but you can't do that up here in the Northeast, whatever. I think the human condition is one that, man, we want to be loved. We want to be cared for. We know, even just sociologically, it is good to be a part of a community that's looking out for you. Right?
Yeah.
Where we look out for one another. I mean, a gazelle knows that, right? Like they're looking out for each other on the savannah. Okay?
Yeah.
You want to be a part of a community that looks out for one another. That is just, that there's this common wisdom, I think, that speaks that. Yet so rarely do organizations or communities operate in that way. It becomes, hey, what can I get out of this community? How can I look out for myself, not my neighbor? How do I, you know, put myself first, not someone else's needs? And none of us want to be in an environment like that. None of us want to be led that way. And I think if we're really, really honest, none of us want to be that person. None of us really want to be that person. We get sucked into it because of fear, because we think we have to.
Right.
But none of us really want to be that person. So this resonates, I think, all the way up and down. And you know, the presence of nations, Donald Trump is a human being. Right? Just like so many of our processors, the newest people to our employees, you know, the president of Rwanda, the president of Uganda, the president of Zambia, the president of Zimbabwe, these are all human beings. These are men and women. They were little boys and girls. They're somebody's little boy and girl, man. They wanted to be loved. They wanted to be cared for. They want to be a part of a community that loves and cares for them. And they want to extend, I think, love and care for others if they're really honest with who they are. So I think this kind of resonates, but it's always so surprising to people when they hear you have a motive that puts others first. When they go, wait, you're not doing this to just take all the resources you can out of Africa, you know, and make yourself rich in America. You're not doing this to control, you know, energy lines. Like a lot of nations are over there buying up massive swaths of land in Africa because they think, hey, it's the next great natural resources, and they want to control those for the power of their nation that might be around the world somewhere. And they go, you actually want to see Ugandans benefit. You go, yeah. Yeah, we actually do. And then they sit back and they watch you and say, are your actions going to line up with this? And they see you, wow. You know, put the first profits back into their community, build a church, build a school, care for young girls who have gotten pregnant, you know, far too early, care for the marginalized. And they go, okay, your words were right. Your actions aligned with them. And now, man, now you have my trust. Like, now I'll come be a part of this thing. And so we just try to live out those really simple principles of loving your neighbor as yourself, trying to honor God by loving his people and loving them well.
You've taken so many of your employees, and, well, they sign up for that, and they have to pay for part of this, but you also help them get on these trips, and it's got to have been transformative in their lives. Talk about that.
Yeah. We just finished our round of Christmas parties also here at Christmas time, and, man, I love them because I get to hear stories that I don't hear otherwise during the year, and I think some of my favorite ones are hearing stories from people that have been overseas and on some of our vision trips and how their lives have been changed and how their perspective on the world's been changed. And I got down on stage, off stage, after giving a kind of year-end Christmas speech at one of our parties. One of my sales leaders grabbed me, and this is a pretty rough, tough guy. I mean, this guy with, like, you know, meat hook hands, kind of like crushed bones in his hands.
He's
got a couple scars on his face. Looks like he might have been a scrap or two. Great guy, great heart, but just a rough one. He looks at me, grabbed me by both arms, and pulled me about an inch away from his nose. And I didn't know if I was getting a headbutt, you know, or what was going to come out. And he goes, "Casey, I'm building my third effing church in Guatemala." I looked at him and I said, "Man, I love it." I just gave a big hug, man. And I said, "This is so funny. You know, this is not the way you would expect to hear this story come out." And he would go on later to send me an email and basically just talking about a little girl he had met there, you know, that had just absolutely broken his heart. And he said, "Hey, I would never let that happen to my little girl." And, man, and I realized that churches in Guatemala are actually like the centers of the community. And he's like, "I don't know about all the Jesus stuff. And I mean, I'm still trying to figure that out. But what I do know is that, man, this is the right thing to do. Like, this is good and right. I mean, we need to care for this little girl and care for the marginalized." And so I would attach it all the way back to, I'm like, yes, man, and God cared for us like that with Christ, in Christ. And that's what I'd share with him. But I was just so moved to hear how moved he was by, like, just stepping outside his comfort zone, taking a leap of faith, and then being compelled to action. You know, because it's one thing to know about a problem. It's another thing to actually be compelled to action to do anything to try to address it.
So many people want to make a difference in people's lives. I think that's a basic need. There's a desire. I mean, assuming people are not just wicked inside. I mean, there is that element that's out there.
Sure.
But I think when you present something like this to people, this, and they want to be a part of it, but they keep coming back to the tactical how. So to the mortgage leaders and business owners or loan officers that are listening to this, the processors, the operational staff that's listening to this interview right now, what would you say to them? What would be the advice you would give them to start making a difference in the lives of others and changing the culture in their companies? What would be your advice, Casey?
Maybe start with a smile. It's just simple. It's really simple. Dave, you're that guy, man. I can think about you, Dave. Looking every time I talk to you, I can see the smile on your face when I pick up the phone. I can see it. You lift me up. You pull me in the direction I want to go. So you're a guy that I want to spend time with, right? I really think it's that simple. You know, we talked about working out. You can start. We talk with my kids about how you be the friend you want. You know, don't worry about finding friends. Worry about being a good friend first, and you'll track them. I think, man, be the person that you'd love to have as a part of your community, your work family. You know, and everyone's gifted in different ways. We have some women here that are incredible bakers, like incredible bakers, man. And they bring in the most incredible treats in the holidays, man, and they're so kind and warm. That's their gift, right? That's not my gift. I'm not a baker. So they love and care for me in a very different way than I try to love and care for them. But all of us have a gift. All of us have a gift. Start stepping out and using it for another's benefit, not your own, right? Not your own. And that's when I think it just never runs dry. You'll never get tired of lifting other people up when it comes from a really genuine, sincere place. And you'll be refreshed over and over and over again of hearing their stories of life transformation because of small acts of kindness, small acts of faithfulness on your behalf.
That's powerful. I tell you, the message is peace on earth, goodwill towards men. Mm. And you're doing that in your you're doing it in your family. You're doing it in your business. And now you're 4,400 employees strong and growing at a crazy rate. Talk about the future. Where do you see the industry going? What is your perspective? And we'll wrap it up with this as we kind of got the Christmas message. Now, look forward to 2018. Talk about your vision for your company, for how you're going to be able to continue to have this impact, both in your business and around the world.
Yeah, there's some things that never stay the same. There's some constants, and I would put that into like culture, right? Who we are, how we treat one another, those things will not change. Again, I think they're uniform around the world and throughout time and space. There are other things that are going to completely change. And technology, I put in that category. Technology is clearly changing everything about our lives, by the way, not just this industry. So don't make the mistake. Some people want to put this into like, oh, technology is changing our industry. No, technology is changing everything in our life, everything. The way we interact with our families, you know, that, like, I mean, I FaceTime with my daughters. This is something my parents did not do with me. It's changing everything. And I think that's going to be very true in our industry in 2018. I think we already saw last week, it came out Amazon and Quicken. It's not a partnership, right? So Quicken's going to be offering loans via Amazon Prime now. That is really exciting. And that is something that better wake everybody in our industry up to understand that consumers are going to be shopping differently than they have before. You know, Yellow Cab was a great business at one point. Fair?
Right.
I don't think anyone is really excited about investing in a Yellow Cab service today.
You know? true.
Uber and Lyft they have shifted the way Americans think about transportation. And that's good. It's a better experience. So, you know, you can either begrudge that as Yellow Cab, or you can think about how to be better than Uber. You know, you can think about how to evolve yourself so that you are not disintermediated, so you're not left behind the technological revolution that is going on, unquestionably is going on. So I think it's going to be marked by a lot of exciting first steps. I think we're still very much in the first inning of this thing. I love what Anthony Shea says, Loan Depot. He'll talk about the first inning a lot. I totally agree with that. The technology that we're looking at has yet to really be applied. Artificial intelligence to underwriting hasn't really been applied. Robotics to the loan process hasn't really been applied robustly. OCR to the document process hasn't really been applied robustly, but it will be. It will be. And I think that's going to happen, you know, incrementally through 18, 19, 20. And in the next 3 to 5 years, we will wake up and see a dramatically different mortgage process that is technologically driven, that really empowers people to be more productive and increases our capacity as individuals to serve those around us. But you got to embrace the technology to be able to experience that.
Great point. So technology is going to be the number one. As far as the overall macro view of housing, I think the tax bill that just passed is going to increase income. I think this could have a positive impact. My wife was just reading me the headlines of companies that are coming back and repatriating, like Apple and Microsoft, that have so many bazillions of dollars overseas and are coming back in America. I really believe that the housing market, I'm very bullish about it. And you look at the stock market, you look at the equities. I mean, I saw someone just post an article, are we in a housing bubble? I think incomes are going to grow as a result of things that are going on. I am very bullish about housing, about the real estate finance industry, specifically companies that are embracing technology such as you are and have the right culture. Do you agree with that, with the housing outlook?
I do. I mean, I think, you know, I'm not the lie guys were all doomsday about the, you know, tax plan as it relates to housing. I'm not. I do think it's going to, you know, I don't know how it's all going to play out over the next decade. That's a much tougher question to answer. Next 12, 24 months, I feel good about housing. You know, and as it relates to technology, you kind of talk about companies that have the right culture. I love, you know, Palantir's kind of take on this, where they would say, hey, the combination of great people doing what people do really well, great technology doing what it does really well, and a superior process. The combination of those three is what really creates a magical experience and what really is the most impactful, however you want to think about solving different problems. I think the companies that get those three things right are the ones that are really going to take market share and succeed in the future.
Well, you're doing that in a wonderful way. I congratulate you on your success. I celebrate our friendship, and I celebrate the really core of what really has kept our friendship alive, and that is, again, the reason for the season, and our faith in the Lord Jesus. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your very busy schedule to be here with us today. Thank you.
Dave, it's my pleasure, man. And like I said, more than a friend, it's wonderful just to celebrate Christmas with a fellow brother in Christ. So thank you, man.
I appreciate it so much. Folks, we've had Casey Crawford, CEO of Movement Mortgage, with us. Merry Christmas to all of you out there. Looking forward to having you back next week. Have a blessed holiday and enjoy your family and go make a difference in your community.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.